The National Rifle League 22 October Course of Fire, this week on Mail Call Mondays. I'm John McQuay with 8541 Tactical, and this is Mail Call Mondays, the show that answers your questions about precision rifles, optics, and equipment. Welcome to the Mail Call Mondays, and this Monday we are going to talk about the National Rifle League 22 October Course of Fire. I shot this at the Westside Sportsman's Club here in Evansville, Indiana, and we shot it the weekend before Trick or Treat, or weekend before Halloween. So, I'm a little bit behind on getting this out to you guys, but there has been a lot going on here recently, but I wanted to not leave you a whole month without a course of fire, since our club usually shoots the NRL 22 course of fire at the end of the month. If I didn't get you this one, it of course would be a whole nother month before we talk about NRL 22 content. So this match, like most NRL 22 formats, is five stages. The stages generally require 10 rounds each, although we did have one that had a higher round count, and we'll get into that shortly. And they can usually be shot fairly rapidly. Our club usually gets done in the early afternoon, so it's real nice to be able to just grab some ammo off the shelf, grab a rifle, go out, and most matches do allow you to get your zero beforehand, so it's really easy to go out with a rifle that you don't have a lot of information on, get it set up, get it dialed in, and go from there. So that's one of the things that really attracts me to these matches. Now for this one, I did shoot the Bagara B14R that I have sitting here in front of me with the Bushnell Forge scope on it, and with a Harris BRM 69 bipod with a KWM podlock on here. So that's the general setup I did, and I used a Reiser Precision Game Changer, a pint size game changer, for pretty much the main bag I used for the entire match. So let's kick it off with the first stage. And the first stage is titled, "It's Like Playing Cards with My Brother's Kids." And this was a 120-second time limit and a 10-round round count. The targets were a 75-yard, 2-inch target on a single hanger. And the equipment allowed is one piece of equipment in accordance with the NRL 22 rules. So this was a ladder stage, and the start position was rifle grounded, mag in, action open. The RO would shuffle five cards, and the shooter will take the cards and lay them face down from left to right. On the start signal, the shooter will turn over the cards in the order they put them down. The number on each card represents the step the shooter will shoot off of from left to right. So if you turn the cards over, you would get, for instance, my order was 2-1-5-4-3, one being the ace, of course. So the order you turn them over is the order you have to shoot them in. The shooter will engage the target with two shots from each step in the order that the cards were drawn. If the shooter isn't tall enough to reach step number five, then that card will be removed and the shooter reshoots the drawn order after fourth card. Step one is the closest to the ground. So I'm glad they clarified that, because you could see people flipping that around to best suit them depending on what their draw was. This one, you had to have a little bit of good memory for it. So you flip the cards over, you have to remember what the order is you shot them in. Because for us, it was about 5 yards between the shooting position and the bench where we had the cards laying. So if you forgot your order, you'd have to go back and look at the order and then go back and get on the ladder. So you wanted to remember that. I always just translate it into a number sequence. Five-digit number sequence is fairly easy to remember. And so for there, it's just getting on the ladder, getting stable, and getting your hits. With the Reiser Precision Game Changer, or the pint-sized Game Changer, it's easy just to flip it so that the lobes are up on the bag and it sits really nicely on steps. I have just enough room with the height of the B14 setup here to fit between the steps easily on top of the Game Changer. If you start getting a really tall rig, you can have problems threading the rifle in and out quickly. So no problems there. I didn't have any problems just getting in position, but I did notice my magnification was turned up a little bit too high, and I tried to fight through it instead of just grabbing the mag ring and flipping it down. I've got a cattail on this. I have no idea why I didn't use it and just crank my magnification down, but I kept losing the target when I moved to the next step, and it would take me a little while to find the target. We are working with a narrow range bay, so there are quite a few targets scattered out there. Neil did a great job with our targets with putting little target designators next to them with a different color flag and a number on it, so you know what target is part of your array. But it's still sometimes you can swing off and go, oop, that's not my target, that's not my target, there's my target. So running lower magnification definitely helps that. I got 6 hits in total out of it, 3 misses, and I timed out, I believe, before my last shot. So I timed out on the last step and didn't get all my shots off there. So overall, I wasn't feeling great about that. One thing I have noticed about this is setting up on the ladder. This rifle is not balanced superbly. Ideally for the ladder, I kind of want to be balanced right in front of the mag well, and this gun obviously is not. Now, it's balanced somewhere right there or so. But when you set it on a flat on the ladder, it wants to tip backwards. So you have to use a little bit more body control to keep the rifle set up there. And when you do that, you induce a little bit of jitter in the ladder. We're setting the ladder out on grass, so it's never perfectly stable. So that was a fairly simple stage to go forward, as long as the wind didn't blow your cards away and as long as you flipped the cards quickly so you didn't waste a lot of time. You did not want to flip the cards over and then spend a lot of time looking at them and remembering them. You want to flip them over, get your sequence, and then get on the ladder rapidly. So that was stage number one. Stage number two is Tank Trap Terror. And this was 120 seconds and a 10-round round count. We had 2 targets. We had a 1.5-inch target at 68 yards on a single hanger, and we had a 4-inch and a 2.5-inch target on a double hanger at 50 yards. Equipment was one piece of equipment in accordance with the NRL 22 rules, and that could be used on the tank trap only. A sling is the only piece of equipment that's allowed during the positional part of the stage. Points were 10 points per impact, 100 points possible. The start position is standing, rifle and all gear in hand, mag in, action open. On the start signal, shooter will take a position on any tank trap tip and engage the 1.5-inch target with 2 shots. Shooter will then transition to a standing position and engage the 4-inch target with 3 shots. Shooter will then move back to the tank trap and engage the 1.5-inch target with 3 shots from the rope on the tank trap. Lastly, the shooter will move to a prone unsupported position and engage the 2.5-inch target with the final 2 shots. The rifle must be centered on the rope and not touch any part of the tank trap. So, this, we all kind of agreed there was nothing that should have been difficult about this stage, but this actually was a fairly difficult stage. I got 6 hits out of it. I got 1 hit from the tank trap tip, which I don't know why I didn't get both hits on that. I was set up with the game changer, again, right in front of it. It felt steady. We were getting gusts of wind, but I don't think the wind got me. I think I just broke the shot poorly. So I only got 1 shot there. And then when we transition to the standing position, a sling, I took a gamble on this because we're moving back and forth between positions where one is slung, one is not. So I decided to go without the sling, not use a sling at all on this one, because I figured the time that I was going to waste getting slung up and getting tight with the sling was going to hurt me in the long run. So I decided to go without it. I don't think I lost too much without the sling. I dropped 2 of the shots from the standing position. I might have gotten those 2 shots with a sling, maybe not. But when I went back over to the tank trap and got on the rope, This one is a little bit more difficult because usually when you have a rope between two solid points, you want to try to get as close to one of the solid points as you possibly can. I lost some points at the Nationals on a stage like this because I didn't go over and just pin the rifle against the solid point. Well, in this one, they actually wrote into the rules that you couldn't do that. So you couldn't slide the rifle over and hold it against one of the limbs of the tank trap to get stable. You had to shoot from the middle portion of the rope. Now, thankfully, the way the tank trap is set up, you can get on that middle portion and you can brace your arms on the other legs of the tank trap and you can put your weight into the trap. So you're basically pushing the rifle against the rope and then pinning your body against it, and that kind of tightens everything down. So from that position, I did get two hits on the target. And then I moved to the prone unsupported position, and it was money from prone unsupported, and I got my two hits there. There, a sling really wouldn't have helped me at all. I was able to get into a nice supported position, and as light as the B14R is, it really wasn't difficult to get snug with it in that position. If it was a heavier rifle, a sling definitely would have helped me out in that, but as light as this was, it wasn't a problem at all. So I came off of that with six hits. Again, that first one, I really am not sure why I missed the first one. The rest of them were just not getting as stable as I would have liked to have been. So that was Tank Trap of Terror Stage 2. Now we move on to 3. Stage 3 is Helter Skelter of Fear. Helter Skelter of Fear is 120 seconds, 10 round count. And we had a 2-inch target on a double hanger at 100 yards, and we had a 0.5-inch swinger on the Know Your Limits rack at 25 yards. The equipment is one piece of equipment in accordance with the NRL 22 rules. Points are 10 points per impact plus a 0.1 bonus point per second remaining. So if you had 8.7 seconds remaining, you would earn a 0.87 point bonus. So these kind of time bonuses, they've started putting them in to take the place of our paper stages. They help kind of open the field up, and they help to be tiebreakers, basically. And I really like these better than the paper stages because they require you to push a little bit. Sometimes I'm not paying attention that it is a time stage and forget about that until after the fact. That was the case on this one, but I still actually did fairly decent on this one. So the starting position is standing, rifle and all gear in hand, mag-in, action open. On the start signal, the shooter will take a prone supported position and engage each target with one shot, starting with the 25-yard target. So 25, 100, 25, 100, 25, 100, etc. Once all shots have been fired, the shooter will let the RO know that they've completed the stage to stop the timer. So I cleaned this with 10 hits, and I actually had 38 seconds remaining on it. Now, because you are really trying to save every second you possibly can, dialing is not a good option on this. Dialing back and forth between 25 and 100 is really, really going to hurt your time. So instead, I just left my scope zeroed out, and I just worked the parallax back and forth between 25 and 100. Now, at 25, that quarter-inch swinger, if you don't adjust your parallax and you just try to aim for the middle of the blur, you can miss it very easily. I've done that a couple of times, and the parallax difference between 25 and 100, even if you're on lower magnification, is still pretty significant, so you're going to have to work the parallax. Now, that's where I actually like to have numbers marked on my parallax, so I can come off the scope, look at the parallax real quick, quickly spin it, to where I need it to be, and then get back on the scope. If you don't have marks, then you just need to look through the scope and you need to dial it until it looks nice and engage from there. I think I actually did a couple both ways on this one, but in the end, I came off it with 38 seconds remaining. That was a decent enough bonus, I think, to give me a lead on that stage. Not difficult, but you just really have to be smooth, and you can't afford any malfunctions or any problems. And I'm actually happy to say that the B14 didn't give me any problems as far as that throughout the match. And our next stage was All Hallows Eve Battle. This is a departure from the normal NRL 22 stages in that this was a 12-round stage. So time limit was 120 seconds and a 12-round round count. The ranges and targets are a 100-yard target, which was at 2.5-inch on a single hanger. 85-yard target was a 2-inch on a single hanger. 75-yard target was a 1.5 on a double hanger. 65 yards was a 1-inch on a double hanger. And 50 yards was a 0.75 and a 1-inch on a KYL. The equipment you could use was one piece of equipment in accordance with the NRL 22 rules, and points were 10 points per impact, 120 points possible. The standing positions, rifle and all gear in hand, mag-in action open. On the start signal, shooter will take a prone, supported position and engage each target from far to near with one shot each strong side. Shooter will then switch to support side and engage each target from far to near again with one shot each. Note, support side means support eye, shoulder, and hand. Shooters can either use a magazine extension or do a magazine change for the additional rounds required of the stage. So I have a couple thoughts on this, but first we'll talk about how I shot it and how I screwed it up. And then we'll talk about why I don't really like the format on this stage. So first of all, I got 8 hits on it. I fired 10 shots, expended, I got 2 misses, and I timed out before I actually finished the full 12 shots. So first thing is, this is one of the few times that you need a dope card for a NRL 22 match. It just makes it easier to be able to reference exactly where you need to be and either dial or hold. Again, this is a time stage and you're only expending one shot on each target, so I chose to zero out and just hold over for the different targets. You could have gotten away with this without a dope card holder on the gun and just write your dope down on a piece of paper and set it on the ground next to you, since this was a prone stage. But I find it easier just to have the dope card on the gun through one of the various different dope card holders out there. Coltac was even nice enough in the NRL 22 package to provide one of their dope card holders. And I'll do a review on this one. I kind of like the format on this because there's very little to go wrong with it. It just bungees around the scope tube and you've got a little Velcro pad, a little piece of nylon on the back, and then you just write on the front with either China marker, dry erase marker, alcohol pen, whatever you want to do, and it makes it very neat and very easy to put on there. So, and again, those came in the NRL 22 membership packets this year, so that was kind of nice. I prefer the dope card on the gun because if you lay paper down on the ground, it can very easily blow away, and then it's something you have to manage. It's something you have to look down at instead of looking forward while you're finding the next target. So that's my preference on that. Now, how I screwed this up, this was the first precision match that I had shot after a couple of days teaching carbine for my local department. And one of the last things that we went through on carbine drills was support side shooting. And I shoot support side with carbine a little bit differently. I teach it a slightly different way than a lot of people teach it. Normally they teach when you're shooting a carbine and you have to roll out left for right-handed shooters from a piece of cover, then you switch your hand to the forward magwell, you bring your hand back to the pistol grip, you move the rifle over and seat it in the left-hand shoulder, and then you utilize your left eye and roll out, and it provides a limited amount of exposure. I teach a slightly different way if you need to be quick and you're flowing through a structure, and that's just take the rifle, move it over to your opposite shoulder, and then use your opposite eye and roll out and engage your target. It is very fast. It's very easy to do that flowing back and forth. And the full reason on why is outside the scope of this video. If you want to see a full video explaining that, leave a comment in the comment section down below, and I'll shoot a video explaining how and why I do support side shooting with a carbine the way I do. But coming off of that, I read the rules. I know what NRL 22 wants for support side. I didn't do it. I just slid over, put the rifle in the opposite shoulder, and ran it like I normally do for a PRS match or anything else where I would have to shoot support side like that. Neil, to his credit, didn't dock me points for that. He still pulled the win. I wouldn't have held it against him if he did dock me points on it. I think the reason is because Neil's seen me shoot support side with this enough that knows that it really doesn't make a difference for me. I do shoot normal support side, not goofy support side, enough that I can generally do equally well with either side. But again, I only came out with 8 hits on it anyway, so I wasn't threatening anyone with my score on this one. Now, the reason that I don't really like this stage is a 12-round round count stage. I am very cautious with anything where we start to make it difficult for base class shooters to shoot. One of the things that I liked about NRL 22 is if you have an old tube-fed gun, a Mossberg or a Savage or umpteen jillion old tube-fed guns, then you could run a tube-fed gun on this. This stage would make it very difficult to reload a tube-fed gun on the clock, so I'm not sure how I like that. Secondly, a lot of rifles out there right now do not allow magazine extensions, so you do have to do a magazine change on the clock. There are some out there that do, some that don't. The Tika T1X is a prime example. To my knowledge, there are no magazine extensions for the T1X. 10-round magazines are all you have, so you got a mag extension on the clock. Now, I did do a mag extension because I'm using the Bergara 10-round magazines, and to my knowledge, there are no magazine extensions for the Bergara yet. I do have a Voodoo 12-round magazine in, but so far it has not played nice in the Bergara action. So unless you want to dedicate a Voodoo magazine to a Bergara, you may have some issues there. Now, I'm hoping that someone is going to come out with a mag extension for the Bergara mags, or if Bergara is going to come out with a 12 or a 15-round mag, because that would be spectacular for this rifle. So I really like them keeping the 10-round round count to kind of keep it even across the board for base class rifles. Open class, okay, open class is whatever. This is an open class gun, so I don't think equipment limitations should be imposed on open class at all, but at least for the base class shooters, and if you're shooting the same course of fire, base class and open class, I'd like to see them stay with the 10-round limit. So that was All Hallows Eve, and now we come to our last stage of fire, and the last stage of fire is Trick or Treat, Smell My Feet. This is kind of an interesting stage. So the time limit was 120 seconds, the round count was 10. We had a 1.5 inch and a 2.5 inch target at 85 yards on a double hanger. Equipment was one piece of equipment in accordance with the NRL 22 rules, and the points were 10 points per impact, 100 points possible. Starting position is standing, rifle grounded next to the 5-gallon bucket, mag in and action open. On the start signal, the shooter will stand by the table with candy on it and say trick or treat. The shooter will take one piece of candy from the table and place it in the bucket. Shooter will take a supported position on the bucket and engage each target with one shot. We don't want you to spill your goodies, so the bucket opening must be facing up, so you can't flip the bucket over. Shooter will repeat the trick or treating and shooting process until time runs out or all shots have been fired. So we put a mat down, we put the bucket sitting on the ground, and we were sitting on the grass with the opening up, so the bucket's fairly unstable to begin with. Now Neil forgot to bring candy, So we didn't have any candy to go back or forth, but we went back and touched the concrete table behind the firing position and then went back up and built a shooting position. I used the pint-sized game changer on the close edge of the bucket, and the rules actually didn't say how the rifle had to be set between the trips back and forth to the candy. I said you had to be grounded on the ground to start with. So what I basically did is bolt back. I turned the rifle on its side and set it across the bucket, so everything stayed balanced right there while I went back and then came back. And then it was just a quick matter to set the rifle up, set it back into position, and engage. I didn't have the confidence, because again of the balance issues with the rifle the way it's set up right now, that I could just leave it in shooting position on the bucket. That would have been ideal, but that just didn't work with this setup. If I was shooting the T1X in the ACC chassis, that has enough weight on the forend that I could have just left it in position on the bucket and bounced back and forth, and it would have been significantly easier. The shooting position was not very stable. I had to keep quite a bit of pressure on the portion of the rifle over top that lip of the bucket, and of course it kept wanting to flip backwards on me, so it did take quite a bit of English on the gun to keep it in position. I only ended up with 3 hits, 5 misses, and then I timed out. I didn't hear the timeout call, and I got 2 hits after time expired, so I did eventually figure out the position and get the things that I needed to work. But it was too late in the firing sequence to really do me any good. 3 hits on this stage really hurt me, and it just really knocked me down quite a bit in the point standing. So I ended up coming in second place for this match. Not my greatest performance. It really didn't do the gun justice, but the problems were pretty much all my own. The Bagara performed just absolutely amazingly, and again, I want to thank Bagara for sending the B14R out to us. We do have the full review coming up very soon. Right now, I've exceeded 1,000 rounds through the rifle, so I've got a pretty good idea of what it likes and what it doesn't like. We've shot a wide variety of ammunition through it, and it has worked very, very well. They were even nice enough to send me out a couple extra magazines. So for stages like this 12-round stage on this one, I had spare magazines. The gun comes with one, but spare magazines are always nice things to have. So overall, not the greatest performance. I had stages on this I liked, stages on this that I didn't like. I like when we have to shoot from support side, because it's something that people don't often practice, and they really should. I don't like the fact that the unsupported stage for this was only partially unsupported, and I didn't feel that it would be a good decision to leave the sling on the gun throughout the stage. I thought it was easier just to manage it without the sling. But I want to hear what you guys have to say about it. For those of you that have shot the October Course of Fire, did you use a sling on the tank trap stage, or did you go without a sling on it? So drop that comment down below. And that's going to do it for this Mail Call Mondays. I just wanted to give you guys a quick rundown of the October Course of Fire. I'm really looking forward to shooting the November Course of Fire, although I haven't even read it yet. And we're going to see if I shoot the B14 in this configuration again, or if I drop it into a chassis. So tell me what you guys want to see. Do you want to see it shot in the stock again, or do you want to see me put it in a chassis system and run it in a chassis and see how much better it performs at these matches? So drop that down in the comments below. And that's going to do it for this Mail Call Mondays. If you guys like the video, please make sure you like, share, and subscribe. And make sure you click that little bell icon so YouTube will let you know when we release new content. If you guys want to help support the content that you know and love, please check us out over on Patreon. And until next time, get out and shoot.